And just to talk a little bit about the College Baseball World Series coming up, starts on Saturday in Omaha. It's double elimination until the best of three finals. The teams participating in that: Texas Tech, Michigan, Arkansas, Florida State, Vanderbilt, Louisville, Mississippi State, and Auburn. So that's half of those teams are from the SEC. Pretty remarkable. But Vanderbilt is indeed the favorite. They were the best team in that conference, the SEC. They won the regular season. They won the conference tournament. Sports Illustrated, in their College Baseball World Series preview, quoted them as having an explosive offense that would be hard to contain for nine innings. And just before we move on to the next segment, just a little quick shout-out to freshman Kumar Rocker. Had 19 strikeouts in a no-hitter for Vanderbilt, an elimination game. State really held off Duke there and went on to win the next game, which was Game 3. It was a three-game series. And just an incredible accomplishment from him. 19 strikeouts in a no-hitter. No MLB pitcher has had more than 17 strikeouts in a no-hitter.
That's crazy.
I found that stat pretty interesting.
And thank you to... Oh, wait, no. Didn't what's his name? Kelly?
Nolan Ryan had 17 and one other guy had
17. I thought Kerry Wood had 20 in a no-hitter.
It was just 20 strikeouts.
Okay. I didn't know if there were the two. But thank you to Brian for that little bit of information as well.
That was very
important. So, yeah, I mean, I don't really watch the College World Series for baseball, but it's always really cool. Anything that has to do with college is always great.
Great atmosphere is there. I know Doug and I were watching like 5 minutes of the softball World Series. The crowd was going nuts.
Yeah, the bench, it's more like a party on the bench.
It's more like a festival than a game.
Yeah, it's actually kind of cool. If you haven't seen any of that softball being played, just turn on ESPN. There's usually a game on there, ESPN2. The players are pretty good for the softball teams. A lot of talent there. As we move on, we'll give a quick shout out to the Women's World Cup team as they completely dominated. I love your word better than dominated. Obliterated Thailand. I mean, at one point I started to feel bad for Thailand.
You got
to
feel for them. They poured it on. I was watching the score go up and up. On like people's stories that play soccer or whatever on Instagram, and it was like 6-0, and I was like, wow, they're really blowing them out. And then I saw like 11-0. I was like, okay, they kind of dragged it now. And then it was 13-0, and they very much dragged it. 13-0. I mean, just
well, it's not
absolutely.
The thing is, you have to with the World Cup, the tiebreakers is goals scored, so you have to almost put up as much goals as you can. I didn't really love the whole celebration thing, counting the goals on the hand and everything. Like, come on, like show some respect at least. I mean, I get it, they're having fun, it's the world's biggest stage for their
you know what, if you don't want to be embarrassed, don't get embarrassed,
dude. It's Thailand soccer, come on.
Thailand, after getting pounded into the ground, I wouldn't want to see
swaddled
some American players counting how many goals they scored against our trash team on their fingers as they're celebrating another goal going
in. They know they stink.
That's a little disappointing.
They know. They're just out there having a good time trying to do something for
I'm trying to figure out a good comparison for this. It's like when the 8 seed in the West makes the playoffs and they're like, yeah, good season, boys, and then they play the Warriors in the first round.
And they get,
or it's like a 16 versus one in the
that's an even better comparison.
Yeah, yep. The 16 wins. They win their mid-major conference tournament, and then they get all the way into the NCAA tournament. Once they're there, they're all excited to play the 1 seed, and they kind of blow it.
Yeah. We have Mr. Rashudi now in studio. You just heard his keys that incredibly just jangled,
and he's bringing a pizza in here.
He is a longtime supporter.
Let's go.
He's a longtime supporter.
He's fired
of the
up.
Program.
He just brought us a pie into the studio here and a little bit of soda. So we appreciate that.
We'll eat that after we cry. We'll eat that after we cry at the end of the podcast.
Yeah,
we'll manage.
It's been a great year. It's been a great run. It's a great bunch of boys.
Thank you, sir.
Woo.
Let me say, young men.
Is that Herb
There'll
Brooks?
Be no crying.
Is that
no
Herb
crying.
Brooks right there?
Wow, that was inspirational right there.
Mr. Rashudi,
I got choked up. I definitely got choked up before the real send-off. So, where were we? Women's World Cup. Actually, one of the players came out and spoke about, one, the lashing that they pounded, that they gave to Thailand, and two, the celebrations. She said about that it would be disrespectful if they played down to Thailand
Which
or stop playing.
Which
Correct.
Is true.
Because we've all been in a scenario, we've all played sports where... You're either
on the winning side or the losing side.
Very badly. You're getting either annihilated or you're just dominating a team. And you'd rather the team just keep playing the way that they are instead of almost playing keep away or just showing that they're above you. You know,
it's right. Condescending is what it is.
Correct.
So you don't have to show off.
I do like extending.
So I think that that's fine. And I love what you said about the rules. It's a tiebreaker. You need – the more goals you score, the better you're going to do in the tournament, and that's exactly what it is. Celebration-wise, she – one of the players said that they've worked their whole lives for these goals to be scored.
Probably Alex Morgan.
Yeah, I believe it was. So from that standpoint, I understand, but to almost be mocking the other team after you're up 13-0 is a little bit childish. I don't agree with that. I know Brian's not a fan of – he said if you don't want to get embarrassed, then just don't lose. So
play better.
I guess, but
– come prepared.
13-0 is a little much. Celebrations should almost go out the door at that point.
Yeah, especially in soccer. Once you're past, like, six, you've got to just be like – you got to just stop and be like, hey, I mean, we're killing them. So calm down, and you know
the line in that game is 4.5. By the way,
5.5. I think it closed at.
Oh, really? Yes. I saw it at 4.5. That was
pound the over.
It was quite large.
Pound the over.
So yeah, I mean, I'm not really much of a soccer person, but that's kind of that oversteps the boundaries a little bit. You don't really want to show off like that.
Yeah, totally. So from the Women's World Cup, we're going to go to the NFL mini camps and some off-season notes. It's been a busy off-season with the NFL. We'll start with Joe Douglas taking over as the Jets
unit.
General manager. I love the
move.
He
is a unit.
And you know what? The Jets are spiraling upwards, not downwards. They're moving in the right direction. Adam Gase is a solid head coach. I think he's going to bring a great culture to the organization. A great pick at number three with Quinnen Williams. I love his smile. He's going to be a great presence in the locker room. Le'Veon Bell, although we know how I feel about him, he's a tremendous player. Sam Darnold's second year with the Jets. They made a lot of good moves on the defensive side of the ball. Gangrene is looking good this year. Maybe not a playoff year yet, but they're going in the right direction. I'll see you guys in week 16 at MetLife. I'll be in attendance.
And on week one, we'll start going in the wrong direction, yeah, Doug. So,
you're probably right.
So we could have all this off-season hype, and it's great and everything, but we actually got to show it on the field. That's what it is. That's what it comes down to, really. And that's what I've learned to think. So, I have a lot of high expectations that will not be met for this season.
Yeah, I don't know. Brian likes to build up the high expectations.
He was actually pretty low this year. Right there, you were a little low on the expectations.
Well, I have high expectations. I know they're not going to be met. I mean, I have the expectations. They should perform at this level based off of what they've done this offseason, based off of what I know that they're capable of doing. I've seen them doing it. They should perform at a level that either is that they can compete for a playoff spot, at least. That's what they should do. Will that be met? No. I mean, they probably won't. It's the Jets. It probably won't happen, but. Ben, you were saying?
I think this is a 6-10 ball club right now, maybe 7-9. I think the ceiling's 8-8 this season. But, yeah, I mean, you look at this roster right now. It's definitely talented, but you don't really have that much depth at cornerback. You have Tremaine Johnson as your number one, who did not have a good year at all last year.
You're hoping for a bounce
back. With Darryl Roberts and Brian Poole. I'm hoping they re-sign Mo Claiborne. We'll see what happens with that. And you look at the offensive side of the ball. Your center's Jonathan Harrison. Good guy, mediocre or below average NFL center. So those are two positions that Mike Maccagnan did not address as GM. And I think those are two big holes on the team that maybe the media is underestimating and some of the fans are underestimating. But talking about Joe Douglas here, I love the hire. He helped build that team, that Eagles Super Bowl team back in 2018, helped constructed it. And he was definitely a big part in that and should be a big part in the Jets' incoming talent in these next few years. Also, rumors that Todd McShay, his college roommate at Richmond, could be his right-hand man. I'd like that from a draft standpoint. It'd be like a low risk. He'd be the VP of player personnel or whatever. But we'll see what happens with that. I think Joe Douglas is a good hire, though. Hopefully he brings us a different aspect than Mike Maccagnan, John Idzik, and
everyone else.
Who am I forgetting here? Tannenbaum. Not Tannenbaum. Yeah, what's his name? Whatever. I forgot his name. What the Jets GMs in the past have brought us.
I mean, that was kind of a bummer. I was excited for the Jets this year.
There's a lot of talents. I mean, Sam Darnold, Le'Veon Bell.
Look, I'm excited too.
CJ Mosley, Jamal Adams. I'm excited to watch them. I watch the Jets in week 17 every year when they're 3-12. So I'm excited.
Dedicated.
I'm excited to watch the Jets this year. And there's a lot of talent. I just hope those major issues that I think are being underestimated get addressed.
Fair enough.
I agree entirely, and I am excited for this season. I think that they do have some potential, and it's an exciting group, definitely.
Going to have a lot of Adam Gase memes this year spiraling through the NFL community.
Those are just great. I love
his original press conference with the Jets, the eyes wide
crazy
open.
I still got three tough pictures of that. They were amazing.
He's actually addressed that in other interviews.
Yes.
It was just a weird scenario. It was just a weird scenario.
A weird moment for him.
Yeah, whatever. Hope his tenure with the Jets will be better than that first press conference. We'll move over to the next team in MetLife, the New York Giants. Pat Shurmur, the head coach, set the stage for the quarterback competition between Eli and Daniel Jones. He said, we'll see what happens. So what do we think is going to happen here? They're kind of like the same kind of quarterback here. Just one's a lot younger than the other. So they brought back Eli Manning after having one of the worst years he's had in his career. They lose Odell Beckham Jr. at the wide receiver position, bringing in Golden Tate. You're not given a lot to work with. From Daniel Jones' perspective or Eli, so I don't know who are you throwing out there. I don't even know.
From what I've heard, neither's been great in minicamp. I saw some reports Eli was horrible, but Daniel Jones was maybe less horrible. I still hate the Daniel Jones draft pick for the Giants. I don't think he's going to be good. He's a Duke quarterback that really didn't do many special things in college. They seem to have drafted him because he's like Eli Manning. I don't know why you would go out and draft a quarterback that's like Eli Manning. He won two Super Bowls, and I know that, but he did not have a great career. He was never a top quarterback in the NFL where you can go after a guy like Dwayne Haskins that definitely, in my opinion, can be a top quarterback in the NFL. I don't think they're going to be good this year. I really don't know. And if we're choosing to pick who you're going to throw out, I think you're throwing out Eli Manning for the first 3 weeks, and then when he shows that he's still has nothing left like he did last year, then you go to Daniel Jones and you see what happens. But I don't think either is going to be successful.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. I think Eli ends up starting, and Daniel Jones comes in a few weeks into the season. But if you're the Giants, one, it's a bad look if Daniel Jones does not play at all this season, because that just proves the pick was not worthy of a number 6 pick. But two, it's also a good look if you hype it up as a QB competition. You send him out there, you say he quote-unquote won the competition, and he starts week one. That's a pretty good look for the franchise, if you ask me. That your number 6 pick is the starting quarterback week one. Obviously, I don't like the pick. I don't think he'll be that good. I heard some reports that he was impressing with his running ability at a minicamp, which is interesting. But, just like I said, it's a bad look if he doesn't play at all. It's a great look from an organizational standpoint if he starts week one. But I think Brian's summary, that's the most likely outcome there.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to throw Jones right into the storm. Really not a talented group at all that he's got. I mean, Saquon, pretty much the leader of the offense, even with Eli in at the quarterback position. Maybe we're looking at sort of a Darnold, Le'Veon comparison with Saquon and Jones eventually. I don't know. Duke quarterback, as Ben said, wasn't too impressive in college. It's the same thing as Eli Manning, just younger. I don't really understand the move. And especially at 6, just didn't make any sense. So that was eye opening there. We'll see who starts. I believe Eli's going to get the start. He'll be atrocious, and maybe we'll see Daniel Jones and reevaluate for next year. So, I mean, the Giants are a disaster. We'll move on to the Titans. Minicamp Marcus Mariota was quote unquote just awful and truly terrible. What do you make of this?
What I make of this is what I saw last year from Marcus Mariota. The guy was not that great. He really is not living up to that, the number 2 pick by the Titans years ago?
Correct.
That potential. And I really think his career is on the downfall here, unless he has a monster year this year, brings the Titans to maybe a 9-win season, the playoffs. We'll see what happens with him. Obviously, known more for his running ability than his ability to make plays with his arm. We'll see what happens with Mariota. I've really never been a huge fan of him, and I think now the Titans are starting to see, and maybe the rest of the league is starting to see, that this guy is not worthy of that number 2 pick he was selected with years back.
Well, one thing you have to realize with the Titans is they've made 2 straight playoffs. You know, they've had some success.
Right. They have had some talent, though, around Mariota.
Right, and last year things looked good with Mike Vrabel. You know, he had a good first year as a head coach. They were like a they weren't an exciting team last year per se, but they definitely got the job done in a lot of games. They had a lot of ugly wins. They had the 9-6 win against the 9-6 win against the Jaguars early in the season, back when the Jaguars were supposed to be a very, very good team early on. But I think that this team can take that next step, and I think it is on Marcus Mariota, because he hasn't been the guy that you expect to draft with a number two pick. Like, you drafted the Eagles drafted Carson Wentz. He's been exactly what you want from a number two pick, with the exception of just staying healthy. Marcus Mariota has not been there with his arm yet. I think this is a make or break season for him. If he can't get it done, they could throw another quarterback out there, and they could be a run heavy offense with another quarterback. And maybe it's time to draft a new one. Maybe it's time to reevaluate if he doesn't play well this year. So I think it's a make or break year for him.
I mean, yeah. I agree. You bring in you bring in a guy like Ryan Tannehill to be your number two quarterback. That is not a normal backup quarterback. He's a guy who obviously hasn't had the utmost success in the NFL, but he's a former top 10 draft pick. He's a guy He's a guy that's there. If Mariota starts playing poorly, I don't think the Titans are going to have a problem throwing Tannehill in there. They're not necessarily going to have a short leash on Mariota, but I wouldn't be surprised if Tannehill got some run this year. I know it could be a bold prediction by me here, but you don't bring in a guy like that just to be a backup, you know?
Yeah, totally. I thought Mariota was going to have a breakout year last year. Just didn't happen. I'm expecting another one this year. He has the tools. As we said, he has terrific running ability. He's got great vision down the field. His arm's a little bit weak for an NFL quarterback, but he places the ball well. He's had some arm issues, which has really been probably his main problem, why he's been so awful in minicamps. Obviously, very early here, and you expect him to improve as it goes on. But if the Titans want to contend here in a pretty solid division, you'd expect the Jaguars to come back, Houston to be relevant yet again at the top of that division.
And the Colts?
Yeah, and the Colts. What am I even I'm forgetting probably the best team in that division.
This might be, looking at this, if Mariota plays this could be the best division in the NFL.
Totally. I mean, Mariota has the weapons on offense.
Corey Davis,
Corey Davis, yeah. You're expecting to improve on what he did last year. He was a little streaky last year. If you were listening to the breakdown, we spoke about him almost every week. He was good 1 week, bad the other. You're hoping for consistency there. Derrick Henry, you're expecting to take over the number one running back position. So hopefully Mariota is able to finally get over the hump. It's all about the arm injury. Is he 100%? Will he be 100%? That's really going to determine the fate of this Titans team as we move on to the NFL regular season. But as we're still talking about mandatory mini camps, Jadeveon Clowney has skipped the Texans' mandatory minicamps over a contract dispute. Obviously, one of the better defensive line players in the NFL, and he just wants his money.
Yeah, I'm going to be real with you here. The Texans should not have put the franchise tag on Jadeveon Clowney in the first place. I mean, they knew there was a chance he was not going to sign that tag, which it is June 13th, and he still hasn't. So Clowney wanted that big contract. I think it was a mistake by the Texans to give him that franchise tag. I mean, from what I've heard, the guy doesn't not want to be a Texan. I think if the Texans entered contract negotiations with him early on, he would have been more than happy to sign with them. But we'll see what happens now. This is definitely an interesting situation, not being there for mandatory camp here in June.
Yeah, so here's the really interesting part. In the past, I would dismiss this. I'd say he'll eventually sign like they always do. But we saw last year, Le'Veon Bell didn't sign the whole year. We saw last year, Khalil Mack at the same position got traded because he wanted this big contract. These guys want to get paid, and they'll do whatever it takes to get paid. And in recent years, we've actually legitimately seen guys holding out for a very long time, and it takes an effect on the team, and it actually pays off, and they end up getting paid either by that team or with someone else. So I could see this. I mean, obviously, it's still very early. We're talking, it's June right now, but if this developed into August, into July and August, I mean, you might see Jadeveon Clowney traded. You might see something go on with him where they say, you know what, we're not going to pay you, or they pay him, or something like that. It's not how it usually goes anymore, I think. I think something changed last year.
It's a great point.
I mean, for the Texans, it's a make-or-break move. Jadeveon Clowney is a cornerstone on their defensive line, pairing him up with J.J. Watt. Losing him, that could put them below some of the other teams in the division. We just read off the list in that division with the Titans, the Colts obviously probably leading that pack after what they did last year, and the Jaguars are.
I think the Jaguars
have a lot of talent.
I think they fixed their only problem. Which quarterback. Quarterback. I think if Nick Foles can do it, they
can even be half as good as what Bortles was. I'm sorry. You know what I mean. Half as good as he usually that he was with Philadelphia.
Just a little bit better than Bortles. Yeah. All they need is a game manager that can get the job done. And if they can get that done, the Jaguars can be back and on top of that division. This is a stacked division. I think they're going to need Clowney to compete.
100%.
This is some good pizza.
Totally agree. Really?
It is.
Umberto's in Huntington. That's what
they cut it into 16 slices too.
We're gonna have a lot of pizza tonight,
indeed.
Though. So
yeah, no, I'm just
a quick snack.
I mean, I got nothing to talk about, so I might as well
just a quick snack. There you go, Mike. Attaboy. Here we go. So we'll move on to the next bit of news in the NFL. The Saints re-signed Cameron Jordan, 3 years, $52.5 million extension. Well deserved. This guy's a terrific player. Probably the best player on that defense with Lattimore, of course. With the Saints, but he had a real breakout year. You know, Cameron Jordan's been a very good player in the league, but I think he got a lot of hype this year. I saw him all over the highlight tapes on ESPN, NFL Network. He was truly spectacular, leading that Saints defense, which was once considered not too strong in the NFL, the worst at one point. But last year they made that tremendous run. Drew Brees was spectacular, so I think it's a great move, the right move to make, something that the Texans should probably follow with Jadeveon Clowney.
Couldn't agree more. Absolutely, and him, what he is, and Marshawn Lattimore have done with this defense is just amazing. This was the worst defense in the league for years. Since their Super Bowl win, they had been horrible, definitely the worst defense in the league, and these two guys come in and they've been nothing short of spectacular. They've turned this whole defense around. They've turned the culture of the team around, even. So I love what they're doing over in New Orleans, and I think this is the right move.
Yeah, totally. Brian covered it all there. Cameron Jordan, really, we use this term a lot, generational talent, especially for the Saints there at on the D-line. You don't see that a lot for them, and it's a great deal for them. 3 years, $52.5 million, it's a lot of money. I'm pretty sure that's the same as Le'Veon Bell's contract, the four years. But definitely, I think, a good signing for the Saints there.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Garoppolo.
It also makes me wonder if he may not be the only Cameron Jordan in the NFL. I mean, you never know.
You never know.
It's a Hills West grad. Hopefully, we see former Hills West football star on the field in Cuse this upcoming season.
Hopefully, you see him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Live.
I'm hoping
from the dome.
You know, he sat out. I believe he redshirted. He didn't play his first 2 years up there. So hopefully, he gets a shot this year. 6'4", wide receiver. I know he went up and got it with the Colts when we watched him.
I'm pretty
he was
sure. I think they
terrific.
Put a lot of weight on him.
Yeah, that's one thing I saw. He was in the locker room we were getting changed for one of the lacrosse things or whatever, and he walked through for some reason with his brother, and man, he's gotten big.
Yeah.
He used to be a skinnier guy on the lean side, mm-hmm. Definitely, but he's a big dude now, definitely. So he could do some damage.
Totally. So I'm expecting a big year from him. With the orange, we'll move on to our final note on the NFL. The Oakland Raiders. Trying to do my boomer voice. Didn't really work out there. That was a little weak. That was a little weak. Let's try it again. The Oakland Raiders.
I like it. Kind of sound like Howard's mom from Big Bang Theory. Who can be calling at this ungodly hour?
Chocolate?
Yeah, also the chocolate lady from SpongeBob.
Brilliant. Yeah. Definitely. Okay, so let's get back on task. Oakland Raiders.
To the Oakland Raiders.
They'll be featured on HBO's Hard Knocks this year. Just the right
team. I'm excited, man.
Right team to put in the show.
It's pure entertainment.
First of all, it's one of the better sport reality TV shows in all the land. Similar to 24/7, which was the...
it was classic last
year,
too.
Yeah, which with the NHL they did with the Winter Classics. So Hard Knocks, perfect show for... the Oakland Raiders, they've got a lot of drama surrounding that team. It was the Browns last year, right?
Yeah, it was unreal.
I mean, it's just perfect. It's the perfect fit. HBO made the right selection here. I'm not a huge fan of the Raiders at all, but it's going to be entertaining nonetheless.
I want all the words from John Gruden here. I was going to say all the F-bombs, which I'm sure we're going to hear. But John Gruden's a very animated coach. I'm excited to see him there. And Hard Knocks is just a great show. You always have that guy who was on the borderline of making the team who you connect with. Last year for me, it was Browns tight end Devin Kajust. He was a beast. And their fourth-string QB, Brogan Robach, obviously wasn't going to make the team. But he's one of the stars of the show there. I'm excited to see who that will be for the Raiders. And I'm a little disappointed my boy Marshawn Lynch won't be on the show. I'm sure he would be pretty entertaining. But again, nonetheless, should be a great season. Very excited.
That would have been crazy if it was Marshawn Lynch, because we already have Antonio Brown, who's the head case and everything. Oh, yeah. That's going to be that's pure entertainment. And then John Gruden, like you
perfect.
Said.
Oh, my. I forgot they were on the
yeah,
same team.
You're right. I
hope
did
they
forget
fight
about
in practice.
That.
I really
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised. You know, they've hated each other for years. They could definitely fight in practice. You know, it's going to be an interesting.
I think they got past it. I think there was like a wasn't there a public thing? Where
there
they,
probably
like,
was, but you know,
I mean, it's still perfect truth? In Brown. Like,
I think Gruden brought these two guys in to almost start a little bit of beef with the team, get them going, and then everybody turns on Gruden, similar to Herb Brooks
exactly.
with the U.S. team. Yeah. They all take their anger out on Gruden instead of each other. They become a team that has talent. I'm not saying Burfict doesn't have talent.
Hate is more bonding than love. That's the line from Miracle. Yeah, and that's the kind of coach Gruden is, honestly.
Yeah, okay, I mean,
he doesn't care if his players like him. He wants to make his team good, and he'll do whatever it takes. I mean, this is going to be a great hard knock.
Yeah, it's definitely a move that you'd expect from Gruden, just the way that he used to talk on Monday Night Football, just his characteristics, his personality. But Burfict's a good player. Antonio Brown, one of the best wide receivers in the league. They've got the talent there. Their last season in Oakland, I believe, correct? Then they're moving over
correct.
To Las Vegas.
Hopefully for them. It depends on the stadium, I think.
Yeah, we'll see how
that
goes.
The stadium's being built. It's going to be a really pretty stadium. I've seen the design for it. It's going to be a nice big dome. Really nice places. Ben knows I'm a Vegas fanatic.
Yeah, Mike's a big Vegas guy.
Big Vegas guy, and I know like everything.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
But yeah, they are planning on doing that. That's all I know. But
yeah, so Hard Knocks should be great this year. And I'll definitely be tuning in. So we're going to move to
topic of the week.
Our topic of the week. This is our last topic of the week ever.
Yeah, it is. We introduced it earlier this year. We've had a lot of fun things. We've also not done it a few times because I kind of ran out of material, but I got a good one here for you guys. What is the best thing you saw this year on a professional level? There's a lot of stuff that's going on. So I think we can all kind of put out one really great thing.
Yeah, so mine's going to be Tiger Woods' victory in the Masters tournament at Augusta. I mean, just chilling, watching him sink that final putt. It's been such a long road. If anyone knows Tiger Woods' story, he was at the top of the world, then pretty much came crashing down, and he's climbed his way back up the mountain, finally back up at the top, putting on the green jacket. One of the best moments I've ever seen in sports history, and I've watched almost everything up probably since... You know, since I remember around 2009 when the Yanks won that World Series, all those sports moments, the terrific stuff that's happened. Tiger Woods this year, just truly incredible. So happy for him. One of my favorite golfers. Really just a generational talent, as you guys have said that word before. It's just so true for Tiger Woods. An ambassador for the game. So happy for him to get that another green jacket.
Yeah, definitely a classic moment for me. I'm going to hit the collegiate level here, Mike. It was the SEC Championship this past season. As you guys all know, the story of the 2018 National Championship at the end of the 2017 college football season. Jalen Hurts, the starter at Alabama, went 26-2, was pulled at halftime after they were losing to Clemson.
Georgia.
Losing to Georgia, excuse me. You know what I meant. Tua Tagovailoa comes in. He absolutely dominates that game. He takes the starting reins for Alabama the following season. He was absolutely dominant during the 2018 regular season. Excuse me. The 2019 SEC Championship, Tagovailoa is having a rough game. They're losing to Georgia again in the SEC Championship. And they put Jalen Hurts in down two touchdowns. He comes in, leads them to the SEC Championship. Really just a poetic justice moment for him. And one of the best moments I saw in sports. I mean, the post game was something else with his interviews. And you could see Tua was happy for him, too. You could tell those guys really did like each other, even though they were in pretty much a brutal competition for a couple years or a year.
And seeing you choke, I just have for a guy who sneezes a lot, have you ever sneezed on the podcast before?
I definitely have.
You know what?
Are you saying
I'm a guy who sneezes a lot?
Yeah, you do. You sneeze.
I sneeze a lot during the spring because I have allergies.
That's
right?
True. I'm just saying, like, I don't even remember.
I don't think maybe once.
I probably have.
I've definitely choked on my gum before. Like, well, I had one podcast which I had a tough time.
Yeah,
with,
I think
with
since
that,
then you just haven't had gum in your mouth.
I haven't. I've went against that, but yeah. I mean, Have I sneezed on the podcast? I don't believe so. There's been different moments where just hilarious. We probably cut him out, honestly.
Yeah, probably.
With all the stuff that's happened. But give us your best professional moment of the year.
My best professional moment of the year is one of the worst professional moments of the year, honestly. It's the it's the missed pass interference call in the Saints Rams NFC Championship game that really cost the Saints the game. Wow, guys, this is our last segment. but anyway, that's definitely my moment. I think that was such a turning point. Obviously in that game, then you get overtime and the Rams end up winning in an OT. It was just, I'm a big NFL guy, so that was, I had to go with something in the NFL. And I think that's definitely the most memorable moment from this season. That's going to go down in history.
I mean, it also sparked conversation throughout the NFL. With the owners, the players talking about pass interference, is it reviewable? Should it be? Should it not? All that, all those questions, and it's something to look forward to possibly in the future with the NFL. Not sure what the ruling is or who's voting for or against it, but I mean, talk about a moment that really defined the history in the NFL, especially for the Saints and the Rams. Rams eventually going on to the Super Bowl, and the Saints going home. With a tough loss. So that's a huge moment this year.
For me, I've been trying to think of something that's not Mets-related because I don't want to sound too like me. But Ben, you guys suggested it before. I think I got to go with David Wright with his last retiring game, getting the chance to come back and play. That did happen during the school year. It was September 29th, I believe. Maybe my date may be wrong, Mike, but it was around that time.
I believe you have the right date. I'm not even going
to
look.
Don't know. Don't bother looking. I'm just trying to go off the top of my head. But that was it was an amazing moment. It was such an honor to be able to be there and watch that happen. David Wright's been my idol, my favorite baseball player of all time since I started watching the Mets, and it was an amazing moment being able to watch him walk off the field one last time. I didn't even shed a tear, which I was really surprised about, but it was just a great moment to be able to be there. It was so special.
Yeah, so I mean, four moments there that will go down in sports history forever. Really great stuff here, and we're gonna move into sort of our final. Topic of the podcast today. We're just going to all go around and talk about this whole Colts Corner experience with the podcasting, the broadcasting, just the last 3 years as a whole.
Doug, I think you should go last.
With Hills West Media last for me?
Yeah, you should go last.
Okay.
Definitely.
Someone lead it off then.
Yeah, I'll take it first. This has meant so much to me. It's been, I have no idea what to say right now. I'm going to open up my heart, I guess. It's been a true journey. I mean, when we started this sophomore year, I knew it was going to be a lot of fun. I didn't know it was going to turn into this, though. I mean, I wrote my college essay about this. I wrote it about how we started this podcast and because we thought we just wanted to have fun with it. And it turned out becoming something so much bigger. We started announcing the sports games. We started, the football games. We got in the booth. We did the live podcast during the art show and the last day of school last year. It's been crazy that we've turned it into this now, and I think the best part about it is that this isn't the last Colts Corner podcast, that it's our last Colts Corner podcast, but it's not the last one because there's guys coming next year to come do it, and I think that's truly something special. They're going to start dragging us out of here soon, so I'll pass it to you, Ben. Michael, or
that's a little weak, by the way, but Ben, go
it's
ahead.
All right. We got it. So I'll go next. It's been an amazing honor to be able to be with you guys. I remember the first time I knew about the podcast, and then I decided one day, I was like, you know what? I want to go watch. I want to go see what it's about, and I want to experience it. And ever since that day, I was able to be there. I sat and listened, and it was just such an amazing experience to be able to be a part of it. And I'm so thankful to you guys for letting me be on. I mean, if it weren't for you guys letting me be here, I wouldn't be where we are today. And I mean, with Brian saying that, I mean, it not only has been an amazing thing for us, but it's also it's defined some of our careers. I know me and Doug going into that field. I mean, it's going to be it's been an amazing journey, and I've only been here for about a year and a half so far. Well, kind of 2 years. And we've had so many amazing moments, so many laughs. I mean, when we were doing our top moments before, we were all just sitting here cracking up. We were practically crying because we were laughing so hard. We've had some amazing moments, and these are years that we're never going to forget.
Yeah, I'm just going to go quick here because I know we're about to be kicked out of here. just want to say I love you guys, and thanks for a great journey, 3 years. We started this. We did everything we wanted to do. whether it be the podcast, the special shows we did, whether it be the Fantasy Football Breakdown, MLB Whip Around, getting in the booth, doing some football and basketball games. It's just been an awesome journey, and I'm happy this happened. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I've been dreading this moment pretty much all day.
All year,
I wanted to keep it positive on my birthday, and this being the last show that we ever do, I just wanted to say that I'm really proud of everyone that everyone sitting here. I love all you guys. I'm really just grateful that we got the opportunity sophomore year when we were first starting this up. And it's pretty amazing how we were sitting in my backyard with a
I'll never forget
with
that,
a little notebook.
What are the plans for this year?
A little notepad, yeah. And we came in determined, and it just...
We did it.
It's really just unbelievable what's happened, what we've been able to create, everything pretty much coming to fruition. As I said, I love all you guys, and it's starting to get a little emotional. So I'm going to stop talking, but... great way to go out. We just nailed it.
Yeah, and that'll do it for us. As always, we'd like to thank the following people: Mr. Doxy, Mr. Shudi, Dr. Catapano, the administration, the Board of Education, our audience listens every Thursday, and finally, thank you to the class of 2016 for their very generous donation towards our podcast setup. Getting a little emotional now. It's tough to say goodbye one last time, but I'm Ben Dixon alongside our always reliable producer, Mikey Stats Garaffa, Brian Flatow, and Doug Suzuka. We'll see you when we see you.